Okay, so I've got a diagram here, a mind map of the conditions for metta. Some that we've already touched on and some that we haven't. And I'm just going to read out all the things that are written up there. And then we can sort of look at them and see how they relate to each other and how they relate to metta. So in the middle, surrounded by a heart, we've got metta. And then we've got sky-like mind, calming, samatha, shamatha, relaxation, turning towards, non-greed or non-clinging, non-aversion, non-delusion, joy, receptivity, openness, sensitivity, insight, faith, non-delusion again, framed as not ignoring, right view and clarity. So there's a lot of overlap between these. You could see some of them are sort of aspects of each other. It could put many more on there. So I thought we could actually, this relaxation. Seems to me more and more that relaxation is like, it's fundamental for everything actually. I can't really think of a positive mental state that doesn't involve or isn't supported by relaxation. I think Bhante said actually that for a lot of people the first thing they need to do on their path is just relax a whole lot. So quite a long way down the line, I still feel that actually one of the primary things that I need to do in my practice is just relax a whole lot more. Keep trying to do that. Of course, the body again, so fundamental. First foundation of mindfulness. Fundamental. Yeah. But I thought we could do another little exercise perhaps, just to really bring home this relationship between relaxation and metta. So let's just stand for a minute, if we're able to stand. Don't worry if we're not, we can still do an imaginative equivalent. Okay, so standing or imagining this posture of arms wide open. So really, as open as feels comfortable. Us. We're just feeling that, how that is. And then just internally saying to yourself, I don't want this experience, I don't like this experience. Just seeing how that feels. Okay, so now trying opposite things, so tensing up a little and saying to yourself, may all beings be free from suffering. All beings everywhere, boundless numbers of them. So we may notice a little incongruity in our experiences, so let's try it the other way. Okay, so let's just try the open posture again. May all beings be happy, free from suffering. Okay, so just finishing that up. Yeah, so that's it. Let's just sitting back down. I sometimes do that when I'm meditating. I imagine that posture. It's basically turning towards, isn't it? It's turning towards. So immediately there's a relationship there between relaxation and metta. And relaxation and turning towards. And there's a two-way thing there, isn't there? So relaxing allows the heart space to open. And when the heart opens, there's a letting go. There's a letting go. So the two things allow each other. So I'm putting a double arrow here. So I'm connecting these two factors by an arrow. But it's a double arrow with two points. So metta's going in the direction of relaxation and relaxation's going in the direction of metta. And the same with turning towards and relaxation. Resisting our experience is exhausting, isn't it? It's tiring. Even subtly resisting our experience, even that subtle pulling away from the present moment towards an idea of something better just around the corner, it's tiring. So turning towards allows relaxation. Relaxation allows turning towards. So, what other connections can people see here? I'm just going to open this up a little. I wanted it to be a bit interactive without us getting into a massive talking fest. Mm-hmm. So, with that in mind, any observations here about links between how these factors condition metta? Yeah.
Openness.
Openness. Yeah. So it's a double arrow, openness and metta. Yeah? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to open the heart, yeah, to feel that volition of well-wishing towards another being, we have to open to them, don't we? We have to see them, and that requires an opening.
Just simply in the posture that you showed us,
yeah,
feeding into relaxation.
Yeah, yeah. So openness and relaxation. It's interesting. Sometimes I think relaxing, openness, opening to experience can be a better route into relaxing than trying to relax. Sometimes you try and relax and one bit of the body relaxes and then the tension just goes somewhere else. But if you actually just open to the experience, relaxation often just naturally follows from that, I've found.
I think it's faith as well.
Yeah, so Leslie's saying if you've got faith, faith is crucial to metta, the condition for metta, because if you've got faith that you can cultivate metta, then you're more open to doing so. Yeah. Yes. Who's saying? Sean saying that in itself is a right view. Yeah. Yeah, so it's a right view that cultivating metta is possible, allowing metta is possible, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that we are able to do it. Yes. Yeah. A non-deluded attitude that it is us, we can do it. It's not about somebody else. We can do it. We're part of this web of conditions. Just, yeah, same as everyone. So, faith and right view connected.
Faith is translated as confidence, trust.
Yeah. So, Verity's saying the faith is translated sometimes as confidence, trust. Yeah. It's about confidence, not just in the teachings, but in us.
Joy?
Yes.
If I'm feeling full of joy, it's not Jesus who's contact metta, but of course, if I contact metta,
yeah.
It's easier to
feel joyful. So Verity's saying a relationship, mutually dependent relationship between joy and metta. Easier to access an opening of the heart if you're feeling in touch with joy. And then that opening of the heart can, in itself, can lead to that experience.
You can't have metta without experience of metta. And for that, you have to get rid of greed and clinging and delusion.
Mm.
So one of those two, either non-delusion, not ignoring, or non-greed, are necessary.
Yeah. So Priscilla's saying that greed, aversion, the poisons obscure metta. So we need the absence of those the stuff that Sadhanandi was talking about, the non-greed or non-clinging. Non-aversion to allow metta to be revealed. And of course, Sadhanandi was linking these to turning towards all of those. Yeah, sorry. Helen?
The relaxed concentration in the present
moment. Yes. Relaxed concentration in the present moment. So, we haven't actually got here presence, but it needs to be there. Mm-hmm. We've got relaxation. We've got calming, samatha, so that is a stilling of the heart-mind. But I'm going to add just presence. Who else has been waiting for?
Going back to joy, I think the feeling of joy is essentially an open world.
Yeah.
And I think the more open we are, the more likely we are to experience joy.
Mm. So, joy is of the nature of openness. Yeah. So there's a link there. Yeah. Needs an openness. And creates an openness. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm just thinking that there should be, feels to me like some pain.
Some pain. So Sarah's saying we should have some pain in there somewhere.
We've got joy.
So, Dukkha. It's a condition for faith, isn't it? Dukkha. Yeah. And often, so we talk about faith arising independence on dukkha, but actually loads of things arise independence on dukkha, don't they? So insight. You can't have insight into dukkha without dukkha. And compassion. Compassion arises out of our knowing suffering. Yeah. So I will add in dukkha. But it doesn't necessarily, does it? I used to have this issue. It's like, it says that dukkha leads to faith, but Does it always? What does it need? What other conditions? I asked Maitreya, I said, what is this? You know, what is that? What doesn't always, does it? Sometimes it leads to more dukkha. So what are the conditions that make the difference? And she said, wise attention. Wise attention. So I've got to put that in there as well. Yeah. Clarity, actually. But we'll put wise attention as well. Surrender. Hold on a second, I'll just... The wise attention and clarity, together with dukkha, via dukkha, lead to faith. Yeah. Surrender. Yeah. So surrender, I would relate to receptivity. Yeah? Happy with that?
Yeah.
Happy to relate surrender to receptivity?
Also, you know, in between dukkha and faith.
Yep. Yes. Yes, so it's not just wise attention, it's a kind of, well, it's a turning, it's actually, it's a turning towards, isn't it? In fact, we're going to talk about this when we come on to looking at the lakshanas in relation to metta. Yeah. Metta. Well, we need metta to turn towards, don't we? And we need to turn towards in order to surrender. And we need to surrender in order to allow the experience of dukkha fully into our awareness so that we can give it wise attention and allow it to lead to compassion and all of that lot that we just mentioned. This is cool, actually, isn't it? You could do one of those memory games. It would be good for the old... aging menopausal brain fog to independence on this. Yeah. So, someone who hasn't. Yes, so we are weaving a web where every jewel is connected to every other jewel. Yeah. So this kind of mind map, it cannot possibly represent reality, can it? Because reality is seamless. And this is a chopping up for the purposes of clarity. But yeah, it's a chopping up. And there are, you know, all this chopping up, putting things in these different boxes. It's just, that's the mind, isn't it? It's concepts. It's not actually, the map is not the territory. So actually, separating boundaries, all of that is just something that's in the mind. It's not something we find in our direct experience. We won't find any boundaries, any separation actually in our direct experience. Theria. Yeah. So virya is a condition because if metta is a volition, it requires some effort and some resilience. Yeah. But it could be the effort of no effort. It could be the effort of surrendering and letting go, which can be quite an effort if we've got a strong habits of, Yeah. Yep. So, virya, yeah, turning towards. Yes. Needs a lot of virya sometimes, doesn't it? I found I was doing some intensive practice of trying to turn towards aversion in my experience some months ago. So really trying to locate where there was most reactivity and going right in there and looking at that process of how it unfolds. Okay, so what really triggers me? And then almost getting a phrase that sort of summed that up. And then, trying to observe how does that unfold? And it was quite a workout, really interesting, that turning towards, you know, the kind of the reactivity wants to go off into kind of, you know, trying to change it somehow, this dukkha, trying to through thoughts or imagined actions or whatever. And what I discovered in that is, actually the strongest place, it's only possible through the heart, through softening. It's the only way I could do it. So I discovered again, the heart, it's actually the softening. The virya is in the softening, sort of paradoxically. Yeah. Just let me add virya. And of course, when we turn towards, again, virya allows us to turn towards, give us the energy to turn towards the fuel. But then when we turn towards, that releases energy, doesn't it? Because resistance, blocking, holding on in the body, all of that is exhausting, as we were saying. Okay. Yes. It's energy in pursuit of the good. So energy which has a real directionality in the direction of the good. Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking, since I've been practicing, I've felt feelings that I've never felt before, and I've felt towards all sorts of people ways I've never felt before. And I wondered if sky-like mind,
yes,
could be sky-like everything. So I've just had to be open to difference and not do what I normally.
So Catherine's saying that since practicing, she's found, you know, that she's had such different experiences that she hadn't had before, and that we've got sky-like mind up here, but isn't it sky-like everything? So there's that lovely quote that's, what is it? Heart like the ocean. Anybody know? Body like a mountain, heart like the ocean, and mind like the sky. So really, that heart like the ocean, it's got a similar thing, hasn't it? The boundlessness, the expansiveness, the beauty, the depth. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The sort of three dimensionality. Yeah. Body like a mountain. Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
I was thinking about, I don't know if it's safe or receptivity, but opening up to the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas.
Opening up to the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas.
And sort of having a sense of yourself as transcendental.
Having a sense of yourself as transcendental. Yeah. So, in some way, bigger than this, small, yeah.
And yeah, sometimes that feeling like you're acting as if...
Something is acting as if something's coming through you, as if you're a conduit, yeah. Yeah. Receptivity, yeah. So receptivity has that aspect, doesn't it? So receptivity is, you know, just receptive to others, receptive to our own experience, but also receptive to, could call it, you know, however you want to call it, the transcendental, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Yeah. Sensitivity and receptivity very much related, aren't they? Yep. And playfulness. Yeah. Yep.
The imaginational.
Yeah. So the imaginal. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so this could be endless. So there was, what was the one before imagination? playfulness. I'm going to put that in, and then I'm just going to say, yeah, I'd like to say a bit more about right view and the skylight mind. So, playfulness. Yeah, so playfulness, it's like an aspect related to openness, isn't it? When we're in a playful mode, there's the sense of like things could go any direction rather than a kind of rigidity. There's an openness in it. A sensitivity to current conditions.
All of these things have to be put into action.
Yes.
It's no good talking or thinking.
Absolutely.
You have to do them.
So Priscilla's saying they have to be, it all needs to be put into action. Quite right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we have plenty of opportunities for that on retreat. I'm going to be doing something about metta as movement and gestures of metta. So, yeah, that relates strongly to what you're saying. Okay. So, we can put this up and feel free to draw more, add more things or make more arrow connections.